It's a central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and I'm standing in the middle of the Fort Pitt Museum, which is temporarily closed for updates to the exhibit, which focuses on the history that occurred here in this spot of Pittsburgh, the Point, where the blockhouse is located, and of course Fort Pitt, which was referred to in a quote that I'll read off of a broad mural that's right in front of me. It says, "The French want to cheat us out of our country, but we will stop them. And brothers, the English, you must help us. We expect that you will build a strong house on the River Ohio, that in case of war, we may have a place to secure our wives and children, likewise our brothers that come to trade with us." And the quote attributed to Tamaqua, made to George Crowan Logstown in 1751, and so begins the idea, the thought behind what eventually became Fort Pitt. The museum that we are in is dedicated to telling that story, and I'm joined now by a couple of very knowledgeable individuals, one of whom is Alan Gutchess. He is the director of the Fort Pitt Museum. He is going to be joining us for a walking tour and or leading a tour for us. And Alan, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate you being here.
Also joining us is Mike Burke. He's an exhibit specialist, very knowledgeable fellow. Mike, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having me.
So, first of all, for people who aren't familiar with the Fort Pitt story, talk about the history behind it, and then we'll get into some of what the museum has that is dedicated to telling that story. Alan, let's start with you.
So the importance of the Forks of the Ohio, the strategic value of it, both for regulating the fur trade and militarily, was recognized by both the French and the Indians and the English, obviously. And so there was going to be a struggle over time to see who exactly was going to control that. And George Washington and many others had realized that building a fort down at the Forks of the Ohio was the best way to control that water access to the frontier.
Because as that quote says, the French essentially wanted to cheat us out of our country, and as we've discussed on this program in the past, they tried to assassinate George Washington with a little trickery, chicanery, if you will, skullduggery, and so we knew we couldn't trust them. Pick up the story from there.
So the first attempt to build a fort down here by the English was really more of a kind of a stockaded trading post. And really, by the time it was almost finished, the French came in mass and basically reminded the English that they considered this to be New France and asked them politely to leave. So really, without a shot fired, the French took the point back away from the English. They built Fort Duquesne, which was a large fort for frontier fortification for the French. And it existed here then up until 1758, when the English came back in force and kind of retook the point once again.
Otherwise, we'd be having this conversation in French.
French, yes. So, and really, they retook it much the same way the French had taken it. There really wasn't, when they actually managed to take the point, the French had already mostly burnt and abandoned Fort Duquesne and already headed downriver. So, immediately, the English then built a small fort, Mercer's Fort, which was to house the workmen who would then begin work on a monumental fort, Fort Pitt. And the difference in size between what the English planned and what the French had done is that Fort Duquesne would almost fit in any one of the five bastions of Fort Pitt. So Fort Pitt was a much more impressive fortification than its French predecessor.
So there is so much here that helps tell the story, and what is here that people should know about Mike Burke in terms of, before we get to some of the changes that you're making, just the basic things that are in place that tell the story of the history of Fort Pitt?
Well, one of our best pieces that we have on display here and have had since the early 1970s is the diorama of Fort Pitt, which shows the fort and the early town of Pittsburgh in about the mid-1760s. So we get an idea of not only the scale of Fort Pitt, but also its strategic importance and this kind of embryonic town that eventually becomes the city of Pittsburgh.
And that's what we're looking at right in front of us?
Correct.
Let's walk up to this and maybe have you point out a couple of the key features of this. It comes up to about maybe knee level. So there's a railing here that we've walked up to and we're looking over it. And this is really cool because you're seeing it in such a you know, obviously you're seeing it on a scale, but it's this multi-dimensional view of the fort.
Exactly. Yeah, it's an excellent piece of kind of old school museum diorama making at its best. So you get a great view of the fort and the early town. And to give you an idea of scale, we are in the far bastion, which is called the Monongahela Bastion. Our museum sits in the footprint of what was that point of Fort Pitt. The Wyndham Hotel is kind of back here on the edge of the map where the King's Garden would have begun.
Washington slept there.
Yeah, of course, in the Wyndham. And you see all the fine detail of the cabins and things, and you can actually kind of look inside a lot of these little structures and see things going on, see people and horses and different activities, artisans working around the village of Pittsburgh.
What else is here that we should look at before we talk about what some of the upgrades are?
Well, we've got some great other things on the first floor. We have a kind of an interactive trader's cabin where we explore the fur trade in Pittsburgh. It's kind of Pittsburgh's first big industry.
Is that the cabin right in front of us?
Just back that way, yes.
Let's walk over there. Okay, so we are now walking into the log cabin. And Alan, who is this fellow seated across from where we're standing?
We kind of refer to him as the White Mingo, which is a Seneca Indian that we know frequented Fort Pitt during the late 18th century. Really the customer base. So one of the three major important things of Fort Pitt was its role in the fur trade, kind of regulating the fur trade, keeping white traders honest in their dealings with Indians, which kind of kept the Indians in a more peaceable relationship with the government, and also just being involved in the mechanics of moving all of the trade goods, everything from firearms, brass kettles, hatchets, knives, clothing, woolens, blankets, moving those goods out to the frontier, and then in return bringing in, and we have examples here in front of you, of deer hides and various other furs and pelts, which were in high demand in both the colonial America as well as in Europe. So the fur trade in North America was a very complex system of moving these goods back and forth to the benefit of both parties. And to give you an idea, in deer hides alone, in the later 1760s and 1770s, it appears that in some years there may have been as in excess of 200,000 deer hides alone that came through Fort Pitt, the vast majority of those harvested by American Indian hunters on the frontier.
And the furs are right in front of us. Am I allowed to touch one of those furs?
Yes, absolutely.
Wow, okay, well, great. Here's a coon skin right in front of me. And is this the real thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Wow.
And the deer hides, again, make up the majority of the trade. And this is, if you feel this has already been worked. It's called brain tanning.
Kind of rough.
Yeah, but this would have been everything from workers' pants, leather pants, gloves, all sorts of garments and things created for use by the Euro-American customers out of these deer hides.
Something that could withstand the rugged life that people, men, lived in those days.
Exactly, exactly.
There are, outside of this room, a couple other things that we probably need to look at, right, Mike?
Yeah, exactly.
Lead the way.
The next part of the permanent exhibit downstairs is known as the casemate. So we have a reconstructed building that would have actually existed inside the walls of Fort Pitt during the 1760s. And these were places that had multiple functions. Occasionally they would store food in them, but they would also use them as a munitions factory, gunsmithing workshops, and also as dungeons for prisoners that were awaiting trial by court-martial. So if we take a walk over, we can see the inside of the casemate.
All right. Here we are. This is interesting. What are we looking at?
So we have this set up as an artillery laboratory, which would have been the place where the rounds, the wooden sabots for cannon shot would have been turned on a spring pole lathe. That guy over there in the corner is working on repairing some gun locks for the muskets. And also cannon rounds would have been filled in here with gunpowder and had their projectiles attached.
So and the projectiles are called, what are they called again?
For a cannon, you would call that round shot, but they also have things called case shot, which is a tin canister with kind of more smaller lead balls inside, like a shotgun shell. And you also have grape shot, which is another similar function, a bunch of smaller projectiles tied up in a canvas bag that explode on impact and out.
Fascinating stuff. And Alan, you wanted to take us in another direction.
We have one other large exhibit down here, which is a representation of the living quarters for the soldiers that would have been stationed here. So it's a barracks that would have housed the men. And again, we have a life cast figure representing one of the soldiers that we know a little bit about who served here, a man named Adam Somm, who was a German who had been recruited to the Royal American Regiment.
He's wearing a bright red military uniform trimmed in black with white hosiery, and it's a remarkable how lifelike this figure is. A dark-haired fellow staring intensely at a map of some kind. It's as though he's really there.
Yes, and actually what he's holding is a copy of his discharge paper from the Army. So this is essentially Adam Somm's last day as a soldier at Fort Pitt.
He doesn't look happy.
Yeah. Well, he served here, and then he went back east for a little while and then came back to western Pennsylvania, built a home, raised his family. And during the American Revolution, his house was kind of fortified, and he kind of allowed his neighbors to flee there whenever there were kind of times of alarm. So, and Adam Somm actually has quite a few descendants who still live in western Pennsylvania today.
And so, Mike, on to the changes now, the things that are being updated, upgraded, whatever term you want to use. And what are we watching right here?
This is Megan Chalonis, and she's actually helping us to restore a 1940s box diorama that shows an American Indian fellow looking down at Fort Duquesne. And so it's a piece that we got from the Heinz History Center. We're rehabbing it so it can go back on display. Somewhere during the course of its life, one of the mirrored panels in the side was broken, and so Megan's had a new panel made, and she's now painting the surface of it to match the one, the existing one.
And I was just remarking how watching her do this is like almost like watching Bob Ross, because it's the technique is similar. Megan, I hope that you're somewhat in agreement with that, and don't let me disturb you as you're actually painting as we speak, but tell us about what you're doing.
Right now I'm just recreating, these are oil paints that they originally used, so now I'm doing it in acrylic, creating a bunch of different texture and doing a lot of the foliage that was around in the model.
And so the Indian is actually perched there looking down from Mount Washington. So this is the view from right across the river here down onto the point.
So this is so much fun watching you do this. Tell us about what's happening here.
Oh, it's a lot of fun to do. We're restoring everything. This one actually was cracked somehow when in transfer. And then we're cleaning all the other panels. It's kind of like Disney when they used to do the glass panels and then film animation through it. That's how this model will be set up. So we're cleaning and then restoring all of the panels so that we'll go back into it.
How long does it take to do what you're doing?
Depending on my dedication to throughout the day, this I've started about halfway done in about an hour or so. The rest of it it'll probably take me a couple days to get through it all.
And you're standing and doing that. Is that kind of challenging physically?
No, actually it helps me visualize because you really just want to get the flow of the foliage. It's never going to be exactly the same. So you just kind of want to get that, you know, ease and flow in there, and that's easier to stand to do it, see it all. It impresses me most that these were made in the 40s. So someone sat down and intricately painted all of these in oils even back then.
And you're doing it now.
Yes, still staying true to the practices. So.
Well, I won't keep you, but Megan, thank you so much for showing us what you're doing, and we can look forward to seeing these on display when?
They should be back on display at the end of the month whenever we reopen. So
very good. Very good. Well, good luck.
Thank you so much.
Mike, some other changes that we might want to see or things that are happening that you can show us?
Most of the other changes are taking place upstairs. So if we want to head upstairs, we can show you what we're working on up there. So just to lead you into the changes that we're making up here, this gallery talks about the French and Indian War and how French British and Native Americans took part in that and their different modes of warfare. Then you kind of wrap around, you continue with the story of the French and Indian War and end with the British taking the point in 1758 before going into this gallery that talks about Fort Pitt. And so one of the things previously that you may have missed if you were going through this part of the exhibit is talking about the Forbes campaign, which is the campaign that comes from Philadelphia in 1758 that actually takes Fort Duquesne from the French. And so we've moved that case and that section down so it's more prominent. The diorama that we saw downstairs will be the other thing that we see before we go into the Fort Pitt section. So right before this taking of Fort Duquesne and this building of Fort Pitt, you'll get this great view of the fort as it would have appeared in 1758.
Now, I'm seeing in a display case, and this may be apropos of nothing about the new aspects of the exhibit, but there is this amazing garment in this display case, and I'm just, my eyes are drawn to it, and I feel like we just have to check this out. Alan, can you tell me about what this is?
I sure can. So part of this diplomacy and the courting of Native nations as supporters involved a lot of gift giving, and the English and the French realized that if you give gifts to the chiefs and leaders of the tribe, you are going to curry more favor. And so one of the things that we see on trade lists, but more commonly in kind of treaty negotiations, of the giving of these very fancy coats and garments. So this is a red wool coat, very heavily edged with gold braid. So it's actually even very heavy. There's literally a large amount of gold involved in the threads. And so if you look up in the case here, here's an illustration from the 18th century showing an Indian leader wearing a very similar coat. This one is a reproduction, but it's based on archaeological fragments that were recovered by the Pennsylvania Historic Museum Commission in excavations at a place called Conestoga Town over near Lancaster. And it probably, the original probably dated to the 1730s or 40s. And then some very skilled tailors at Colonial Williamsburg, looking at those fragments from the archaeological record, recreated this coat for display here.
Very interesting. So, well, Mike, you'll lead us to some of the new stuff.
Sure. As we walk through this section, we're going to have a kind of a header here that's has some introduction to this section of building Fort Pitt, so that we can give visitors a sense of the importance and also the monumental scale of the fort in the 18th century. So we can walk on through. Here as well, we'll also talk about the construction techniques used to make the fort. And so we'll have some 18th century tools on display. We'll also have a case with a surveying implement. We actually pulled it out over there. We can take a look at it. So we'll talk about the monumental engineering feat of building a fort in the wilderness with materials that were harvested on site. So trees that were cut on site, bricks that were cast on site. And this is all work that's done by hand in the 18th century. So we'll also add more illustrations of people doing these types of work to give visitors a sense of the effort that went into it.
Wow. Well, that'll be on our website if you want to take a look at that. What else should we see? What are some of the other new things?
Well, we're also going to talk more about the three main functions of Fort Pitt, this military function, this economic function in terms of the fur trade, and the diplomatic function. And so we're going to have some more fur trade artifacts installed, like this brass kettle, which is a key trade item to American Indians in the 18th century. And we'll also have an interactive piece over here that we're going to put in place. So we'll kind of blow up a large graphic showing Fort Pitt in 1761 so that you can see all the buildings in detail, and then we'll have some bricks on display, some 18th century bricks so you can actually kind of lay hands on a part of Fort Pitt.
And that's, I guess, is a big part of modern museum showmanship, is that you can't just have something in a case and people walk by and they look at it. There has to be a hands-on element, doesn't there?
Absolutely. And so interactive pieces are very important to what we do here. And we also have a few artifacts, like some of the cannons that are on display, which are so big and have, you know, been outside before. So they're so big, we don't put them in a case. You can actually have them on the floor, and you can actually touch an 18th century cannon. So these elements really help people to connect with the past and the type of activities that went on here back then.
Yeah, don't look now, but there's one aimed right at us where we're standing. Plenty to see and to do, and the Fort Pitt Museum will open back up when, Alan?
On the 30th of the month.
And Mike, before we wrap this up, you wanted to mention the captives exhibit.
Sure, we have our temporary exhibit that's on until May 22nd of 2016 is on the practice of captivity by which Native Americans took European and African settlers captive, adopted them into their own society, and essentially made them into Indians. And so it's a practice that's extremely important to the history of Western Pennsylvania and something that we wanted to do a permanent or a temporary exhibit about.
We will look forward to that, to the Fort Pitt Museum reopening, telling in new, different, and exciting, and in some cases hands-on ways, the story and the history of the Fort Pitt Museum right here at The Point in Pittsburgh. I want to thank both of our guests, Alan Gutchess, who is the director of the Fort Pitt Museum. Alan, thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And Mike Burke, who is the exhibit specialist, very knowledgeable fellow. Thank you so much, Mike.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
And you can check out a video on our website of the artist Megan Shalonis painting / renovating the diorama of the Native American looking down on Fort Duquesne. It'll be on our website this afternoon at WESA.FM. Tomorrow on the program, Vic Volchak of the ACLU in Pennsylvania talking about the decision reached, a deal calling off a trial over whether the state left hundreds of people with mental illness to languish in county jails. Until then, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.